the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
1 hour, 8 minutes, 56 seconds. Okay, where do you want to start with notables?
Sure. We'll be quick on this. So Janet Yellen is in the news this week because Fox News and other outlets too, CBS, a whole bunch of others, because they're reporting that she is starting to think that a soft landing just may not be possible. We've been talking about this for some time. This may just be more of a dream than anything else. And she's also coming out and saying she is regretting that she said that inflation is transitory.
That's the funniest thing, man.
That
it's sad, but it's also like, it is pretty, you gotta admit, seeing her on TV, like, cop to being wrong about that is significant, I think.
No, so I'm gonna side with her here.
Okay.
I honestly don't think she believes it was transitory all along. She was saying that because she was in the position she was, and her association with the White House, it made sense politically to say that, to try to ease the market, to try to instill some confidence in the general population. She got her PhD in economics a long time ago, 1971. Granted, you know, it was a different time back then, but also it was at a time when hard money was in existence. She went to Yale as well. That was, you know, you can say what you want. That's a prestigious school. So I don't think she is obtuse. I think she understands what the fuck is going on. I think a lot of what she says is just because it's politically advantageous to say what she says. So when she's talking about transitory, I don't believe she believed that. I think it was just, you know, she was forced to say that just because of a variety of different things. But, and now it's becoming a real problem because there was a poll done by CBS News back in December. I know it was a few months ago now. But that poll back then in December was showing still inflation was number one issue amongst people that were polled. And that beat out immigration, which seemed to be one of the hot topics and hot issues these days. But still, inflation is still number one in people's minds as of December. And I don't think things have changed very much since then. So I'm looking at this. They have a long road ahead, both the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department, to righting the ship. Soft landing, it is not in the cards. There's no fucking way they could do this without wrecking the economy. There's going to be some collateral damage along the way. Jobs are going to be lost. There's going to be a lot of fucking problems coming along. But this is the reality of it. They painted themselves into a corner. They can't keep rates high the way they are. They're going to have to eventually lower them. May not happen the next time, next meeting, but eventually they're going to have to lower rates. Not just because it's an election year, but also it's getting costlier for them to service the debt. They're paying more than $1 trillion a year, the United States is, to service their debt. It's already unsustainable, but they can't keep it like that. They got to somehow lower lower the rates to lower the cost of servicing the debt, which may buy them a little bit more time to keep this thing running. Eventually it's going to fail, but that's what they have to do. They got to somehow lower it. Lower the borrowing costs and the interest rates and all that shit. But man, oh man, I kind of feel bad now for Yellen after hearing all this. I'm actually starting to see her as, you know, I'm starting to feel bad for her.
You think she's a sympathetic figure in all this now?
You know what? I think she's put in a bad position. They inherited. Yeah, you could say. You took this off. Put that shit back on, Joey. Put that on, Joey.
Listen,
when they came into power, the economy was stopped. The QE was going nuts. What could they, like, they could have stopped QE sooner, but they were fucked to begin with. And so they didn't help themselves out. But let's be honest, they weren't in a position that they could have continued success. It was fucked to begin with. Their decisions fucked it even further. And here they are. A lot of the decisions were political, but she's not a dummy. She knows what's going on and she understands.
I'm not saying she's a dummy.
I'm not saying you are, but some people, like, they look at her and they mock her and all this, but fuck, you know, like she does understand. It's just, everything is just, it's just wrong. And just, she has to make you.
Yeah. You know what? I'm turning over a new leaf. Okay. I'm not going to be mean. this is like, to me, I understand that she is a political animal, okay? And I understand that there's value in calming the market during times of turmoil, specifically the time of turmoil we had in 2020. That was crazy. Stock market went limit down twice in the same day. Bitcoin dropped 75%. You know, you're talking about negative prices on crude contracts. And I get that there's value there, of course. But the problem I have is that when you say things like that, it influences the behavior of people who are not smart enough to know that what you're saying is meant to calm markets and not meant to be actionable advice. And so when people do things like, you know, take out big loans or quit their job or do other things that would imply, you know, actions that would imply that times are otherwise stable and the landing will otherwise be soft. And then you tell them 3 or 4 years later that you wish you hadn't said that and things actually don't look like they're going to be so soft now. Where does that leave the average person? It leaves them in a, yeah, I was going to say a tough spot, but you're right. That's another way, that's another way to say it. And so what
they were
what
fucked to begin with. There was no way around it. There were
the problem is the, you know, sort of the rate at which they are fucked now, right? The speed at which they are fucked has accelerated, right? And to, you know, sprinkle that word in for the first time this show. So why should I feel bad for Janet Yellen? I understand that she was put in a tough position. Of course, we all were, Len. But I wasn't able to say and do things that I thought were untrue. Instead, I had to make decisions that are going to affect me for the rest of my life. You know, I've renewed my mortgage twice since COVID. I bought a house. I moved. You know, I've done a lot of things since COVID that I had to make decisions based on what I thought was best. And unfortunately for me and for many people, I couldn't look to the people who were at the podium or in the press gaggle for accurate information because I knew and you knew and people who listen to and watch this show know, you know, even though we weren't doing it at that time, you know, we know that there's a reason they speak this way and that the people who are up there are not necessarily there to tell you the truth, but are rather there to pacify you in some cases or calm you for the moment, right? Put a little rum in your bottle, as the saying goes. It doesn't mean long-term it's going to be accurate or, you know, it doesn't mean long-term that the intention wasn't to just quickly mislead you or misdirect you so that you avoid a catastrophe in the immediate future. And now people are paying for that in a big way, big way. The layoffs we've seen in the last, you know, year in tech, the layoffs we've seen in journalism, layoffs we've seen in trucking, layoffs we've seen in all kinds of places, US, Canada, Europe, everywhere. You know, do you think they see Janet Yellen as a sympathetic figure?
No, they don't. The reality is a lot of bad decisions were made before she came in and after she came in.
Yeah.
But not just by the Treasury Department, not just by the Federal Reserve, but also the general population as a whole.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of people were funding lifestyle on credit card. Maybe they're doing so based on her words, or maybe they're doing so based on poor financial decisions.
I get what you're saying. I'm with you. So I'm
there's
with
a you. Lot of everything that's wrong. It's just, it's cumulative decisions up until today that got us to this point. It's not one particular person that is to blame. It's everybody.
It isn't. No, no. You're right. But I'm saying, like, for the average person, okay, the weighting that those decisions during COVID should have had, you weren't able to accurately gauge how much you should be weighting those decisions because of the information you received from people like Janet Yellen. And so you made decisions that you otherwise perhaps would not have made. Now you're right. Some people would have made them anyways, right? There's a lot of people living beyond their means and doing things that are irrational.
They've been doing that long before COVID.
Broadly unwise. Yeah, exactly. Right. Since
just higher interest rates just makes it more challenging. Right.
So there's all these things to consider, but I don't know if you were sympathetic and I don't view Powell as sympathetic. I think that Powell is doing his best in a lot of ways, but I think in other ways he's, you know, also trying to, you know, to tame the crowds. He's a guy who's sort of dancing. He's a marionette sometimes, it feels like, you know, like he's doing what is best to get the crowd laughing and smiling and trying to keep them from leaving the theater. But I think everyone's got an eye on the exit now, right? So hypothetically and figuratively, literally and figuratively. So Yeah, I don't know. I disagree with this take. I don't think these people are sympathetic. I'm not sympathetic to them. I hold them in some respects in contempt, but also I was bright enough at the time to realize that that's their job, but so many people weren't. So many people weren't, right? Everyone was worried they were going to die of COVID and, you know, among other things for a year. And, you know, now they're realizing, well, yeah, I did some other stuff during that year too that I kind of whiffed on because I didn't give it the thought it deserved. I just listened to what I saw on TV. Well, you know, here you are now. So hopefully you don't make that mistake again. But again, not too much faith, right? That's the model a lot of people use, and they've used it for many years, as you mentioned.
She's going nowhere, by the way, too. So that's another thing, that she's going to stay in that position until there's going to be potentially a change in administration, and then they'll assign a new person in that position. So she's going to be there until the bitter end, and then she's going to go off into the sunset, do her speeching engagements, making six figures for every time she...
Oh, she'll be balling for sure. 100%.
Yeah. And just like, you know, the president, the former presidents do, just, you know, people want to hear. Didn't she also... do a speaking engagement not too long ago?
I don't know. What do you think we see first? I think we see a rate cut in the United States or a Kate Middleton public appearance.
Is she away?
My wife thinks she might be dead. I don't really follow the royals, but I know there was a Photoshop picture of her that the press refused to run last week or 2 weeks ago or something, and the pilots had to walk it back and say, yeah, sorry, this is Photoshop. She's not actually in the picture. Like, pretty bad. So
why is she gone?
I have no idea. She got surgery or something. Somebody in the chat will know for sure, but she got surgery or something like that and just never came back.
This shit's beyond me. I don't follow that.
It's so you don't nonsense. Know? You don't have a bet? Is this on, can we get like a predicted market on this? Predicted.com?
If I had to guess, because
Kate Middleton public appearance or rate cut versus in the United States.
It's for me, it's a coin flip because I have at least somewhat more knowledge on one topic and the other one I have zero knowledge. So for me to formulate an opinion, which is going to come first, I'd rather flip a coin and let the odds dictate it that way. So I have no clue. There's going to be, I could say that you're probably going to have, it's maybe like one or two before the election. It seems like they're going to be waiting a lot longer for cutting these rates, both in Canada and the United States, for a variety of reasons. And that's interesting because a lot of people were talking about it being, there's going to be cuts. Shit, we should have had it already, some cuts.
Yeah.
So, man, this is messed up. Now, is there any chances they could even raise rates? I think that's still, man, like, there's a possibility. Like,
Wall Street Journal or New York Times ran an article today that, or yesterday, today or yesterday? I guess not yesterday, it was Sunday, but recently, about how the U.S. economy still seems to be on solid footing and maybe conditions aren't restrictive enough. We really need to knock things down. Keith Dicker on Looney Hour last week saying that if he was Tiff Macklem, he would raise 50 points at the next meeting and just set the whole thing on fire and wash out the leverage and wash out the garbage and wash out the ill risk. And
but what's the end goal there? Because the risk will eventually come back. It's not like it's lost forever.
You just need to reset. You need to get rid of all these bubbles and you need to get rid of all this garbage in the economic data. And the only way
that's
to do
so
it is
fiat.
The only way you to do it is to burn it down. I get what you're saying. Like to rely on, you know, interest rates is basically the key lever, not fundamentals, not growth, not, you know, anything except basically M2 and interest rates. But this is the way it's been, right? This is the way it's been for a long time. We're only coming to this realization as a Bitcoin group, you know, in the last 10 years, but yeah.
What do you think is going to happen with the election down south? Do you think that Biden is still going to be the Democratic nominee?
Yeah, I do. And I think that if he gets on the same cocktail, whatever was on during the State of the Union and the debates are only an hour and a half, I think he could win, honestly. How's that?
I could you repeat that? I want to make sure I heard that.
I think if they put him on the same cocktail he was on during the State of the Union and he's lucid for an hour and a half with Trump, I think he could win. I think he could. I don't know. I think he's a good politician and I don't think he's this evil guy that everyone says he is, but on a debate stage, he needs his opponent to be rattled. Clinton was rattled in all her debates with him. And in the last election, Trump tried to rattle Biden. He couldn't do it. And the feedback was that this guy was just trying to interrupt him all the time. In the second debate, he didn't interrupt Biden at all. And he was on that lucid cocktail. And I thought he handed it to him. And he looked good in the State of the Union the other day. You know, I disagree with the politics, but from the delivery, I know from the point of delivery and coherence, you can't tell me it wasn't all there. Engaging with the gallery, you know, again,
I don't think
this is the, like, this is not the baseline for Joe Biden at this point. I don't think any sane person believes that, but if you can get him on whatever, you know, let him sleep for 2 days, put him in a cryogenic chamber. Like, I don't know what they did.
No. You have to feed him softball questions, and you have to steer the conversation away from all the contentious issues to even have a hope in hell for him to win a debate, because there's so much material that could be brought forth to show why it is that he is not a good person to run the country for yet another term. And it's not like this is ancient history.
Yeah.
All they have to do is just bring up shit that's going on right now. All the money that's being spent towards Ukraine, all the migrants coming over, look at the economy, which, you know, you can say it's doing well. It ain't, you know, like, there's still so many people out there that are suffering, and there's so much shit out there that you could bring up and just engage people's emotions and just draw upon. And Trump could do that.
But
fuck, man, if I had to say there's a chance that Biden could win an election, it's like the Leafs winning the Stanley Cup this year.
I think it's a lot higher than that, buddy. I got to be honest with you. I think
they're both zero. They're both fucking zero.
I think it's a lot higher.
Statistically, there's a chance. But
not to get too far foot on politics here. Maybe we can bring on our American friends to talk to us about it. I would love to bring on like a sort of dyed in the wool Democrat to talk to us about it. Because we don't get the other side of that coin a lot in Bitcoin, but
I had a chat this past week with I can't say too much.
Yeah, tell me after.
But
I will say that, like,
tongue is out, I gotta do.
Yeah, look, man, from a political point of view, and to tie it back into Bitcoin, okay, you don't need a Trump presidency as a Bitcoiner to be successful with your Bitcoin bag, because I think that the policies from the Democrats are more favorable to inflation, the more favorable to a ripping stock market, the more favorable to paper wealth than maybe the Republican platform is, only because it seems like the more we have, it's just, I think it's a lot of left-leaning politics these days in here too. You know, you could say what you like about the political scene in Canada, but generally these days, left-leaning politicians want to put money in the pockets of voters. And that's proven to be inflationary over the years. COVID's a good example. And when there's an inflationary environment or an environment that's friendly to asset bubbles, Bitcoin benefits, it is a liquidity vacuum. There's, you know, good and bad about that. And we're seeing Bitcoin perform in an environment where there's not tons of liquidity from the average person or from retail. But make no mistake, man, if you get another, you know, 100 billion, 500 billion, you know, trillion dollars over 4 years in the pockets of people, we cancel debts, we cancel loans, do all these things, raise minimum wages, all this stuff. That money's got to go somewhere. And I think a lot of it's going to go into Bitcoin, and that's good for Bitcoin. So, I, you know, from the perspective of someone who holds Bitcoin as a, you know, store of value, I don't really care who wins. I don't think it changes the direction. The inertia on this cruise ship is so you know, it's so strong now that maybe you get changes on the fringes, but generally speaking, you're going to be going in the same direction domestically for sure. And, you know, it is what it is at this point. The interesting thing to think about, and I mentioned this to you and the Bull Bitcoin guys in our chat last week, the interesting thing to think about is if you look at the policies that are being put in place, you know, all over the modern world when it comes to stuff like immigration and you know, sort of what some people would call buying votes, I would just suggest that, you know, these guys are really serious about winning one election. But I don't think it lends itself necessarily to winning more than one. And so I just wonder why they're so concerned about one election and not maybe the future of elections. Something to ponder there.
4 year cycles.
Yeah. Something
to, something about to, 4 years.
Something to ponder there, I think. But we don't have to talk about it on air.
Well, China, I mean, I just wanted to talk about that really quick. China, if you look at the way they're planning things, it's with a much more long-term thinking. It's like a 100-year plan. That's lacking in other countries as well. They're not looking that far in advance to try improve
for
things.
Sure.
And not to say that China is doing things that are good. I'm just saying with that type of thinking, you're trying to you're aligning your focuses in a different way. Instead of trying to figure out what's going to happen this year, next year, you're looking at what's going to happen 20, 30, 50 years and how to improve people's lives then. Is if you look at what's going on in China, like if you really break it down, look at the past 20 years, 30 years, how things have changed. Improved? I would say yes.
Yeah.
Because some like roads have been built, skyscrapers have been built, subways, airports, it's a modern society now. It's now like 30 years ago is nowhere near like this. And they've done this all very, very quickly because they have a long-term vision. Oh, well, we'll talk about let's go to Notable North.
Sure.
And we can be quick because we don't have too much time. Peterborough, I'm not sure if you saw this story that came out, but they're tackling the homeless situation over there with a different approach. And it's almost, if you look at what they're offering the homeless, it's almost like a glorified garden shed. That's the way I'll describe it. Maybe that's a wrong way to say it, but it's not very large. It's very, very small, like a garden shed, more permanent structure though. And they're charging people less than $600 Canadian a month to use it. And they even say that drug use is allowed over there. So the people that are homeless that are, they're unfortunately, they're addicts, they're still able to do their thing over there. So they're not going to suffer from withdrawal. But apparently this is something that is so successful that other mayors are calling the mayor of Peterborough to try to see if they could implement the same type of setup in their own neck of the woods. Man, they're fucking garden sheds though. Like that's what they are. They're like, but this is what we're moving towards. We're moving towards like these trailers. You ever see that home you could buy from Amazon that they just drop ship it to you and you just,
I looked at it. I went to Amazon and looked at it actually. Yeah.
I don't know what it costs, like $20,000-$30,000.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's what we're going towards. These like cheap, small, cookie cutter type situations. I don't know. It seems like it's going in the wrong direction.
We've talked about this. Let me talk about this from the point of view of the drug use first. You guys know I'm on the board at Wayside House here in Hamilton, and we take very seriously this idea that supervised use and safe supply are just, they're oxymorons. They don't work. Safe supply makes it out into the street. It gets sold and causes further overdose deaths. There are no examples of safe supply centers producing good outcomes for communities or the people who use them. There's a video circulating that you may have seen on Twitter that, you know, I'm not going to share, but you can find it. I think Adam Zavino tweeted it out, of a safe supply house in British Columbia. It's a flop house. It's people who need support, need help, and are getting anything but. They're just getting drugs and being left alone to use them and, basically trying not to die while they get high on what's, been called safe supply. Insane. So that's one problem. When you put people who have substance abuse problems in tiny homes, you're basically just moving the tent city, right? It's a sanctioned, subsidized tent city now. So instead of the tents coming from Canadian Tire, you're actually paying for them as a tax base and getting the same result. You're still getting an unsafe area. You're still getting no additional GDP support. You're still getting danger in the streets. You're still getting drug abuse. You're still getting overdoses. You're still getting all these problems. And you get nothing back. Except that maybe you get your city park back and someone else has to live with this in their backyard now. Great. I would also argue that since those tiny homes are in lower income areas, you're more likely to get a spread of that lifestyle through osmosis than you would be if those tiny homes were in high income or high education areas. They would never be there, of course, because that's a tax base that no one wants to piss off. And that's a tax base that's well-versed in influencing municipal policy. So you'll never get those houses in those areas. The problem when you put them in houses that are low income is you're already in an area where people are more likely to adopt that lifestyle if things go sideways for them. This might be difficult to hear, difficult to say, but it's true and it's demonstrably true. In fact, Hamilton has this problem and I'm sure Toronto and other major metropolitan areas have this problem. So you're not getting any benefits. Now, if you want to talk to me about, well, this is more dignified living, I would tell you to fuck yourself is what I would say. And I would say that for a couple of reasons. And I mean that wholeheartedly with every ounce of my being, because I've seen this many times over the year working at Wayside House, the importance of putting people in situations where they can succeed. And if you don't put people in situations where they can succeed, and you don't give them the tools to succeed, they will fail. A roof and a door are not tools to succeed. It might be part of the equation, albeit a small part in a lot of situations, but these are not tools for success. And when you talk about what it means to live, and I tweeted this out the other day, and I'll say it again here, things like living have meaning. Living is being in a situation where you have a job that's fulfilling, or at least not demeaning or degrading, that allows you to put a roof over your head in a community where you can contribute and volunteer and raise a family if you like, and have a fucking dog and some leisure time and contribute to the growth of your society, the growth of your town, the growth of your community. This doesn't do any of that. It doesn't do any of that. It is a jail cell in a place where people need anything but this type of closed-in quarantine with other people who are of the same mindset and suffer from the same problems. You're going to get the result that you expect to get, listener, viewer, when you put these people all in the same boat with no supports around them. You're going to get the same result. Everyone talks about insanity being, you know, defined by trying the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. This is what I see here. I hope that we don't go this direction in Hamilton. I hope we don't go this direction in Burlington. But, you know, to your point, Len, mayors are looking to sweep this kind of thing under the rug, and they don't want it in parks. They don't want it near schools. This is exactly where they want it. They want it in low-income areas where nobody goes anyways. And they want the problems contained more than they want them solved. And it's a sad state of affairs, but I think a lot of this stuff is just beyond debate.
It's the easiest way for them to deal with it on a short-term basis. Just set up these small homes, almost like somebody was making a somebody was comparing it to bubble situation where he has his cats and everything. So just set it up and have, instead of having a homeless, as you mentioned, in parks or whatever, just have them, at least they have a roof over their head. And then from there, you could try to tackle the issue. I don't think that the issue will be tackled. It's just, you know, you're just sort of moving the problem from one area of the city to another. But at the very least, you know, there's an opportunity for them to take or to pay for cheap, cheap rent, cheap real estate.
Who's paying? Do you think people who are living in tents before suddenly have the means to pay rent when they move?
That's what I was gonna get at.
Of course they don't. Of course they don't.
Like, the people that are paying this, like, I don't know who the heck is going to be doing it. Like, if you're like really on down on your luck, you don't have the money to pay for this. So you're, you know, whatever it is, it's fucked up.
It's not a good situation. I know I said I wouldn't be mean. I don't mean to be mean to these mayors, but like, man, you have to look around and ask yourself, what am I getting for this initiative? You know, what are these people getting for this initiative? These are people like you and me, you know, they're down on their luck. Yeah. You know, like they deserve better than.
They were born, they were babies, then they were, these are fucking people.
Yeah.
Right. Like, something
they need support. They need support. And like, I understand, don't get me wrong. Okay. I'm not a bleeding heart. I understand that some people are beyond help.
Yeah.
I know that, but it doesn't mean you don't try. You don't just half-ass it and then say, well, look what we did. We built these, you know, bubble shacks. It was comically funny to live in a shack 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And now living in a shack is municipal policy in some cities in Canada. How's that for a shift in the Overton window? Does that worry you? What's the next 20 years going to look like?
Well, I could give you a glimpse into what that's going to look like, because the Toronto police, they're saying out there avoid conflicts with thieves, one thing that you should consider doing is leaving your keys next to the front door. So that way, if they are going to break in and take the keys for your car, at least there's not going to be a confrontation to take the keys, take your car and run away. And it's a cleaner way of doing things. And
cleaner way of getting your property stolen. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it's incredible that they're even suggesting that, but there's a rash of car theft that's going on throughout Canada. And somebody mentioned, I don't know if I said this in the show before, but somebody told me that there's even people that saw cars in Nigeria with Ontario plates still on it. And they stole it. They shipped it to Nigeria and they didn't even take the plates. They just left the plates, the Ontario plates still on it, and they're driving around over there. It's a fucked up situation. And that's why, like, if you have a newer car, be careful, because you know, you never know if you're gonna get that thing. So that's why I'm happy I drive the beater, because who the fuck's gonna want to steal it? Number one. Number two, nobody can fucking drive my car. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the beaters, and hopefully everybody else is gonna do the same thing. The beige Corolla, that's the way we gotta go, man. But there should be a spike in the price of beige Corollas if we're all gonna start buying it. So I might have to go to Cavaliers or something else. We'll see.
I'm looking for a clip that I saw of Polyev talking at a campaign.
Is that the
rally,
one where he's
maybe
talking about the car theft?
Yeah, the car theft. So he
talked about that in the House of Commons.
Yeah, so I'll break it down. He went to Brampton or something, or Burlington, and was talking to community leaders there. And someone brings up the story of he had his car stolen, and he had an AirTag in the car and was able to trace it to a rail yard. And got to the rail yard.
It's even funnier than that. What? It's he had his truck stolen first.
Yeah.
Then he got it replaced by an insurance.
Yeah.
His replacement, he decided, you know what? I'm going to take action and be proactive and put an AirTag on the replacement car. Truck, sorry. Did that. And that was too stolen.
Yeah.
And that ended up in the...
He follows the AirTag to a rail yard. And when he gets to the rail yard, one of the CN guys or whatever... you know, comes up to him. I don't know if it was CM, but one of the guys in the rail yard comes up to him and he's like, thank God you're here. I just tracked my stolen car. It's inside this, this box car, this rail car. And the guy goes, whoa, buddy, slow down. You can't be here. He fines the guy, issues him a fine, for being on whatever private property, I guess, or rail property. And then the thing ends up overseas. Another guy, another video I saw the other day, or today actually was taken the other day in Toronto. A guy, or not in Toronto, in it was in, like, I want to say like a rural community almost, but the people who live in that city will for sure be mad at me if I call it that. I can't remember the name of the city, but it's like six guys breaking down a deadbolted door, a door that's deadbolted from the side, like in the way you'd normally deadbolt, and from the top. And they spend like a minute kicking this fucking door down, breaking the glass, kicking the door out of the frame. They grab the keys. They go to the back of the house. They identify the car they're looking for. It's this Rolls Royce. They take the car. The guy's got a fire, an alarm going off, spotlights on, a gated lockup. They just ignore all of it. They all get in the car. They bulldoze the gate and they drive away in the car. Like, that's a pretty brash robbery. And I get what the Toronto police are saying there. I think it was, like, if I want to just defend kind of the public facing constable, That's not an enviable job, by the way, to do media for the police, especially this day and age. I know that all too well. It's difficult to answer those questions on the spot. What he's saying is, if you want to avoid being shot or stabbed by a guy who has nothing to lose, who just wants your keys, you know, if he's already broken into your house, just leave the keys by the door and it'll help your odds. Fine. I get that cops aren't going to be able to help you with a home invasion generally anyways, right? It's going to be too late when they get there, even in the best case scenario. But there is such a thing as reading the room, and the concern that a lot of people have is for their safety. And what they can't understand is, in an environment where police forces are asking for greater budgets and they're being told that, you know, they need more money, cop to pop ratio is down, blah, 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 violent crimes are up, they get a lot of pushback. There's no pushback. There's always pushback. Why are the police raising their budget? Here in Hamilton, Chief Frank Bergen parried questions from our counselors. Some of them I thought were pretty poorly thought out. And
how much are they raising it by, percentage-wise? You know,
I don't know. I'm not sure off the top of my head. I mean, you could look up. You could look it up, but
somewhere in the line between, you know, 7% and 12%.
That's average. You know, that's average.
Right. That's like average. That's inflation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Like, and
you can't fault anybody for, you know, because everybody's trying to get that 5%.
And they're asking for these things for reasons that are becoming more and more clear every day. And people in the press can get upset about, well, look, I can't believe this idiot cop said this. Well, you know, if I look back in your newspaper, am I going to see that you guys published a story about why the police shouldn't get a raise in their budget? Am I going to see a story about how we're discriminatory in our policing practices? Am I going to get a story about how certain neighborhoods don't get enough police surveillance while others get too much? Am I going to see those stories? Because if I do, then I don't want to see stories about how the police guy flubbed the answer about violent crime. These two things are two sides of the same coin. you can't tell me that you want to raise the standard of living for everybody, and then as the standard of living goes up in some neighborhoods, people who don't have that standard of living come to your house, steal your shit, and don't get caught, and you're not allowed to chase them down, engage with them, or expect the police to do anything similar to that. That's not good for growth. People who want nice things want their nice things protected by property rights. And property rights, if not enforced by the person who owns the property, need to be enforced by the people with the monopoly on force, the police. And if neither of those parties can enforce property rights, there are no property rights. Then you have a problem. That's when you get breakdowns of society, when property rights no longer exist, sort of prima facie, right? Like at first glance. And when you don't have property rights, people leave. People leave. Productive people don't want to be in areas like that. Look around the world. If you want to see the most easily, you know, the two data points that are most easily correlated, it is property rights and GDP. Those are the two big ones. They're always together. They never stray. Okay. Tight, like white on rice. Okay. This is the beginnings of a problem with property rights, in my opinion. And it's something we should be keeping an eye on. It's something productive people will not stand for. And as digital nomads become more common, it's something they won't hang around and find out. They won't fuck around and find out, as the saying goes. They'll just take off, right? They don't want to have to chase their car with an AirTag to a rail yard to have some guy tell them they're being fined for being on private property. It's not a desirable outcome, and it's not one that people will stand for.
And I'll reiterate that I'm a big fan of treating the disease, but in this case, it's the easier way to treat the symptom. Get a shitty car. Get a shitty car that nobody could drive. Make it stick, for instance.
My fucking car died on Friday. Fucking speaking of shitty cars, or died on Saturday. Now I'm maybe in the market for a new car.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you got a newer car.
No, my wife and I just bought an SUV because her car was cooked.
Yeah.
And now my car is fucked, dude. So please donate. Please boost the show.
Joey needs a car.
Help me get a 2010 Kia or something. I can drive the 10 kilometers.
Oh, that's new. Wow.
I'm driving an 07 right now. So
that's still new, man.
what was the new tech in 2010 that wasn't 2007s? I don't know. Bluetooth decks by default, maybe. Is that the big change? I'm not sure. My deck doesn't have Bluetooth. There's nothing.
I had to put an aftermarket head unit, so it has hooked up. So now and mine's old too. My car is so fucking old that it's the parts were designed in the 90s because the first model year of my car was in 1999. So the parts that they were making manufacturing for that from the factories, they were designed in the 90s. That's how old my fucking car
is. Classic.
But it works. And that's what you got to find a car.
Toyota. Paulie in the chat saying Toyota. I was looking at Kia.
Toyotas are good.
Maybe I will look at Toyota. I would buy a Toyota. I'll buy anything, man. I don't want to spend any money.
Something mechanically fine with a good deal of rust on it. You want it to look awful. You want something, nobody's gonna, you can leave the key in there, nobody's gonna fucking touch that car. You know, it's when you turn the key, that motherfucker starts and it goes. That's what you want. You don't want something that is mechanically shit but looks good. You want
They got some bangers here. You can get a 2014 Elantra GL with 122,000 kilometers. Guess how much, Len?
What year? Sorry,
2014 Hyundai Elantra GL.
7,500.
9,900. That's not bad. I just need a car to get around when it's raining. Honestly, I'll just walk or ride my bike otherwise.
Narwhal driving a 92 Ford F-150 is
insane. That is being long Bitcoin. You love to see that. Paulie now telling me not to buy. Okay, listen, we're wrapping this show up. Okay, I got shit to do, which includes editing this program and now also shopping for a vehicle. So we gotta get off this. Do you want to just give me closing thoughts?
What's the train yard and just find some new car over there? So give the guy a few extra bucks and you're good to go.
Hey, buddy, I just want to check out what's
it comes with plates and everything. It's already registered.
That's so good. I love that. Good night and God bless everybody. We'll see you Wednesday. Till then, take care of yourselves.
Don't be a cuck.
Don't forget, everybody, lots of other stuff on CBP Media Network, including Two Whites and a Blue, me, Joey, My brother-in-law, Mike, and our friend Will talk about all the problems millennials are having with finance, romance, and just getting by. If you'd like CBP, if you like the NHL 94 podcast, I guarantee you'll like that one. Search for it, Two Whites and a Blue, anywhere you get your podcasts. We look forward to seeing you.